We're reading from the sixth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita this afternoon, entitled Dhyana Yoga. Dhyana, Dhyana Vastita Tadgatena Manasa Pasyanti Yam Yoginaha. The real Dhyana Yogi is one who meditates on Krishna within his heart, or super soul, the soul of all souls. But Dhyana Yoga is usually the chapter where Krishna describes Astanga Yoga, Ashta meaning eight and Anga meaning part, the eightfold yoga of mysticism, of which Hatha Yoga is a preliminary part. In other words, Hatha Yoga is not the be-all and the end-all of yoga. Yam, Niyam, and Asana. Asana means sitting, sitting place or sitting postures. Yam and Niyam means you don't smoke cigarettes and drink tea while practicing yoga. You're a vegetarian. Yam means civility, morality. Before you can practice yoga, you have to first become a human being. And that's actually something, in the sense that you will find, if you look around the world today, there are many animals that have two legs, two arms, a head, and quite similar to human beings in physical stature. But by their activities, they really aren't human beings. They may be sophisticated cats and dogs, but they're cats and dogs. Because their only business, really, in life is eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. Albeit more sophisticated, but that doesn't make them better than gross physical animals. It simply makes them a little more sophisticated, different. Dharmina hina pashubi samanaha. Without a spiritual goal, without brahma jigyasa, without inquiry, who am I, what is the purpose of my life, cho rasi lak yoni ke bad, after passing through 8,400,000 different species of life, atato, the Vedas say, the very beginning of Vedanta Sutra. You've heard of Vedas, and anta means the end of, and sutra means code form. So the Vedanta Sutra takes the essence of all the Vedic literature, which is a huge pantheon of literature. You could hardly read all of them in one lifetime. What to speak of, learn the sophisticated Sanskrit to understand the meaning. So even if you could go through all the Vedas, which is highly unlikely, hardly you could understand it, but here it is in code form and sutra form in the Vedanta. So the very beginning of the Vedanta Sutra is Atato Brahma Jigyasa. Now is the time to inquire, where's food, where's sex, where's show? No, not that inquiry. The birds and the bees are inquiring, where's food, where's sex, where's shelter? All the animals are. You're meant for inquiring, who am I, what is the purpose of my existence, why am I forced to suffer? Why am I forced to get old? Why am I forced to get diseased? Why am I forced to die? I don't want any of these things. Why am I in this position? Where will I go when the body is annihilated? These are important questions, and unfortunately, we become so preoccupied in the business of eating, sleeping, mating, and defending that we literally have no intelligence or even time to ponder these questions. Great British or I don't know if he was Irish or British, because I don't even remember his name, but all great poets were either Irish or British, right? Or English. What is this life? If full of care, we have no time to stand and stare. No time to stand beneath the boughs and stare as long as sheep or cows. No time to see when woods we pass, where squirrels hide their nuts in grass. No time to see in broad day. Anyway, it goes on like that. Who was that? $64,000 question. Was it Wordsworth? Or Longfellow? Or Browning? I don't remember. All I remember is the poem that struck me in school. I was, wow, deep. But practically speaking, we don't have the time. We don't make the time. That's it. We don't make the time. We should inquire. Where am I going? What's the purpose in my life? So, asana yoga, yam niyam, regulation. Niyam means regulation. Asana. Then, the whole purpose of sitting postures is to control your breathing, control the life airs within the body, to regulate them so that the mind is calmed down. You cannot meditate. You can imitate, but you cannot meditate unless your mind is calm. And in today's fast-paced rat race society, so-called, very hard to be calm. In fact, we're filled with tension and stress, and nobody's teaching us anything really about spiritual life. We may be encouraged by some section of the society to become Christians or Hindus or Muslims or Jews or whatever, but that's not spiritual life. Spiritual life means to ask questions and to realize that I am spirit, aham brahmasmi. I am Brahman. I am qualitatively equal with God. Quantitatively not, but at least in quality, I'm equal to God. Why am I suffering? This is a contradiction. It's embarrassing. I'm Sat Chit Ananda, I'm eternal, I'm full of knowledge, I'm full of bliss by constitution, and yet I'm forced to experience Asat Achit Nirananda, a temporary life full of darkness and ignorance and wondering and not knowing, filled with fear, and no bliss, no Ananda. Oh, there is Sukh and Dukkh. But they go right together. One precedes the other. It's a succession of duality. Happiness, distress, happiness, distress. Sometimes I'm up, sometimes I'm down, sometimes I want to be up and I'm forced to be down. We're not in control. We're not. Just when you think you've got everything figured out, just when you think you've got your friends and relatives all lined up, your bank account is burgeoning, your job is going great, your sex life is, you got it all figured out, you're in charge, bam! You're turned upside down. Volte face. We go through it again and again and we don't learn. Deja vu all over again, right? We don't learn. We just chew and chew and chew the chewed. We chew and we chew like the wonderful cows in India. You buy sugarcane juice, and it's a great drink. If you haven't had sugarcane juice, you've got to have it once in your life. Whatever, go to India, go to Brazil, go somewhere, get sugar. Anyway, they squeeze it in this machine with, grind it up in two wheels, squeeze it out, and they put the cane through once, and you think, oh good, I'm going to get my drink, and the juice comes out, and you know, you get your money out, and then the guy takes it and folds it in half and pushes it through again. Okay, he's got to get his money out of it, all right. But then he takes it out again and folds it again. He says, come on, man. And then, you know, practically when it's sawdust, he takes it through, you know, his son comes over and they both push it down and push it through and get up on the wheel, and, you know, the father's turning and the son gets on his back and, you know, turns the wheel. And they push it through the grinder again. And then they take what's left, the pulp. No, it's not pulp, it's sawdust. And they throw it in the street. And then the cow comes up and chews it again. Just to get a little drop there. That's what we're doing. We're chewing and chewing and chewing just to get a little squeeze, a little drop out of the body. And what do we get from the body? What payment do we get after all this diligent service and effort? Finally, we get old age, disease, and death. And it's coming up quickly. Sneaks up on you. That's why devotees shave their heads, so they can remind themselves that the hair's going to fall out some days. If you don't get rid of it voluntarily, it'll fall out anyway. So, pranayama is to control the mind, pratyahara is to focus the mind, dharana, dhyana, and samadhi. Dhyana means absorption of the mind in the absolute. And I said the real dhyana vastita tad gatena manasa pasyanti yam yogina. The real yogi knows where to repose all his energy in the Supreme. And samadhi means complete absorption. And in one sense, you've got to more or less, you know, you've got to agree in one sense. We've got you here inside this brightly colored temple room, and you're seeing Krishna and Krishna's representative everywhere you look, and you're hearing the sounds of kirtan and talks about Krishna. You're smelling flowers offered to Krishna. You're hearing screams of babies from devotees and and you know, you're seeing the Lord, you're going to taste very quickly Krishna prasadam. That's samadhi. All your senses are absorbed in Krishna. I didn't even get into the verse, did I? Yam sanyasam iti prahur yogam tam vidhi pandava nahiya sanyasta sankalpo yogi bhavati kaschana. What is called renunciation, you should know to be the same as yoga, or linking oneself with the Supreme, O son of Pandu. For one can never become a yogi unless he renounces the desire for sense gratification. So, this is what really causes us distress, is our attachment. Material attachment, it forces us to be in a compromising situation. Because, although, as I said, there's happiness and distress, and many people try to negotiate a situation where they have much more happiness and less stress. Everybody's trying for that. How many actually achieve it? You know, it's the blokes who have the summer homes on some island off the coast, or, you know, they fly out in their helicopter on the weekend, and we're all forced to stay in the hellhole here in this beautiful city of London. I gotta be careful, you know. Who are these New Yorkers coming here and telling us about our beautiful city of London? Yeah, actually, I'm Canadian, so I'm from the colonies. But the nature of attachment is, you know, if you have a stick and you pick up one end of the stick, you pick up the other end also. You can't pick up one end and not, you get both happiness and distress because of your attachment to the happiness of indriya tripti, sense gratification. Therefore, you get sense deprivation. You get gratification and you get suffering, misery. Both. They come in the same package. Varieties of, you know, it is changing. If you're suffering, don't worry. Pretty soon you'll be enjoying. And don't worry, because pretty soon you'll be suffering again. It's like that. Because you're attached. So you have to try to mentally understand that this, it's this sense gratification, yehi sansparsa jad bhoga, dukkha yonaya, the birth. Dukkha means suffering and yoni means birth, place of birth of all our suffering. Dukkha yonaya evate. Adyanta vanta konte anateshu ramate buddha, those who are buddha, and I'm not saying Gautama buddha, this is a different buddha, but same idea, those who are intelligent, they don't get trapped by this vicious cycle. They understand it's like a coconut, you know, a green coconut. I don't know if they sell coconuts in the market here. You get them all over, in tropical countries especially. I was just in Brazil. You get them in India and Malaysia and so many places like that. So the green coconut, inside the shell, there's meat, white coconut meat. And it's attached to the shell, stuck to the shell. But as the coconut gets older and older, more experienced coconut, you see, the meat separates from the shell. So you shake it inside, you know, the brown coconut? You shake it and you can hear there's something inside. You know, you won a prize or, you know, so there's something inside there. And you open it up and there's the meat and it's totally separated from the shell. So you have to learn how to live in this world free from attachment. And there's no other solution than to develop attachment for transcendental things, for Krishna, for God, for the Supreme, and his paraphernalia, and his devotees. And it's not dry, it's not monotonous, it's variegated. But you have to develop that Vaikuntha Bhava, that transcendental vision. Krishna tells Arjuna, Dadami Divyam Te Chakshu. I give you divine eyes. Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanin. When your eyes are anointed with the salve of love for the transcendental personality of Godhead, and just try to understand that the absolute truth is a person, and I'm so happy that he's a person. I'm so happy that God is a person because I can reciprocate with the Supreme. I mean, can you imagine? What would you rather do? Would you rather be a lump of sugar, or would you rather taste a lump of sugar? I don't know about you, but I like sugar. I mean, I like to taste a lump of sugar. Which, trying to be God, first, it's not possible, and there's no reciprocation in oneness. It's only two that reciprocate, the lover and the beloved. So I'm so glad that Krishna is a person, and it would be inconceivable arrogance. It would be a huge limitation if I were to say, I can be a person, you can be a person, my family are persons. I have a love for my person, my husband, my wife, my children. We're all persons. God's not a person. He can't be a person. You're putting a limit on him by making him a person. It's ludicrous. Of course he's a person, but he is a transcendental person. He has unlimited qualities. He can do anything with any one of his senses. He has the capacity, the power. There's no limit to him. But he's a person. He reciprocates. He has feelings. He has emotions. And he can also have a completely divine female existence also. In Radharani. So, there's a group of people who want to call God it, because they're afraid to step out of the itness zone. They're so hung up. I don't care whether God is. I am Prakriti. I am to be controlled. Whether in this world I have a male or a female body, we're all trying to be Purusha, when the truth is exactly the opposite. Neither of us, male or female, are Purusha. We are Prakriti. We are controlled. Ekale Ishwar Krishna. There's only one Purusha, Purushottam. That's the Supreme. And he's a person. And I have to renounce my own material attachments and develop attachment for him and enjoy sense gratification with him, in communion with him. Devotees are full of sense gratification. I've never seen people enjoy so much sense gratification. Far ahead of the materialist. Because our sense gratification is ever expanding, ever increasing. It's like in the higher planets, according to the Vedas, living beings there drink soma rasa. Soma rasa is a kind of heavenly intoxicating beverage. So the demigods are not living in the spiritual world per se. They're UFOs, unidentified living beings. They're not unidentified to one who knows about them, but there are living beings everywhere in the universe. Everywhere you look, there are living beings in the water, in the air, in the earth. There are bodies made of, there are living beings in the sun planet. Just as one would think there's nothing living in fire, but it's been proven that there are living beings at temperatures upwards of 662 degrees Fahrenheit. That was proven many years ago. There are living beings everywhere. Anyway, the demigods have this intoxicating beverage which increases and heightens their perceptions. Not like alcohol or drugs, which tend to distort and burn our perception. But Krishna and our relationship with him, the emotions, the feelings, that carries us to a whole other realm that goes deeper, is fathomless. And we can know this by even going a little distance, because even swalpamapyasya dharmasya, even that little distance is so relishable, is so tasty and so superior. It is not that we are totally inexperienced. I was not raised a Hare Krishna. I know what it is like. I know what the material world has to offer. Intoxication, meat eating, illicit sex, and so many other varieties. I know about that. But I can understand that even a little drop of transcendental happiness, which is free from the inebriety of this material world, I know it's going to increase because the people who initiated me into this happiness have assured me that they are experiencing deeper, and I know I've gone deeper in my short period of devotion. So I can only understand how deep that sense gratification is, and I can have it in this human form of life. I can have it. I just have to give up my attachment for the negative, for the temporary. Not so easy. You have to try. It has to be an effort. We've cultivated attachment for these bodies for a long, long time. How many years? 50 years? 30 years? 5 million years? Many lifetimes. The attachment goes deep. And now we're learning all this wonderful philosophy and sounds good to titillate the mind, but is there any reality there? Well, you have to explore. And you have to make the effort. And giving up your material attachments, it's something like, you know, it's like... That's what I feel. But it's definitely a wonderful journey, and it's worth it. And you can't become a devotee, a yogi, a devotee yogi. You can't become a yogi unless you renounce the desire for sense gratification. You have to develop spiritual desires, and that's a cultivation. Rome wasn't built in a day, and your spiritual life is not going to fructify without giving it a little time. So we meet together and we discuss uttar prashan, questions, answers. We discuss from the eminently wise knowledge of the Bhagavad Gita, the wisdom here, incomparable. We discuss, we look at the world, we consider, and then we make our decisions and we try to go forward. But we're here to at least neutralize our doubts, or at least, if not destroy completely our doubts, at least get another paradigm or another conception. In other words, at least as long as I grew up, I remember, I accepted what was spoon-fed, the pablum I was spoon-fed all my life, because I had no alternative. I had nothing else. But when Prabhupada gave me something else, I was able to look at that and say, yes, that might be better. It's certainly more promising. There's hope. Hope springs eternal. There's hope. I know there's no hope in material life. I'm going to get old, I'm going to get diseased, and I'm going to die. There'll be a few good times, a few bad times. Sometimes I'll go to the pub and I'll buy drinks for everybody. Sometimes I'll be broke, I'll be on the dole, and I won't, you know, whatever. Sometimes I'll win the Irish sweepstakes. And that'd be nice, wouldn't it? Anyway, sometimes things will go okay, and sometimes they won't, and then I'll die. And I probably knew more when I was a little child than I know at the time of my death, because I'm so confused by the plethora of different bahu shaka hyanantasya, unlimited branches to this material tree. Bhagavad Gita compares the material world to a banyan tree that has, or banyan tree has unlimited branches and unlimited roots. So in the Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna is explaining to Arjuna that, look, Arjuna, you should focus, fix your mind. Vyavasayatmika buddhi, that's the intelligence you need. Those who have no focus, they're totally irresolute. They can't do anything with their lives, especially spiritually. Because bhu shaka hi anantascha. Ananta means there's unlimited. Bahu means many, bahu shaka, and ananta means many and unlimited. And you just walk down all those different paths and they lead to a dead end everywhere. And finally, you've got to turn to someone who is self-realized, someone who has knowledge. You have to take guidance. And we're taking guidance from the Bhagavad Gita, and we're also taking guidance from a very highly self-realized soul, a pure devotee we call Mahabhagavat. Maha meaning great, Bhagavat meaning knower of the scriptures. Very great person who, out of his love, we didn't pay him. There was no $50 fee for initiation and $500 for flying. We know how to fly, but we didn't have to pay, no. We paid British Airlines the $500, and then we fly. We don't give it to Air India. Sometimes we get to Air India. So he gave us this knowledge based on our greediness. He liked greedy people, greedy for knowledge, those who wanted to know and sincerely showed their desire to know. He gave freely. He gave the knowledge. He gave the tutoring. He gave his life as an example. He took the trouble to correct us and yell at us. He took the trouble to cry with us in our sorrows. He bled for us. He was a Vaikuntha man. And he gave us these books, and that's how we're using the human form of life to become yogis who are free from the desire for material sense gratification and who want to develop spiritual sense gratification. So I think I'll slow down, let's say. Are there any questions or comments or challenges, smart remarks, wise